The Imam of Peace becomes the Imam of Bombshell. The UK gets a seemingly pro-Israel prime minister. Let's analyze. And the man who began the Palestinian movement wasn't a man of societal cohesion and ataraxy? Let's dive in. And welcome to this week's edition of Midi Snooze Brief, episode 21. I am your host, Winston R. Holland, and it is good to be back again. As y'all know, I was gone for a couple of weeks in June, but unexpectedly, I've been gone for a couple of weeks in July. What happened? Well, if you follow me on Twitter, you may have shown, you may have seen that I got a little bit under the weather. I was basically in bed for a couple weeks. Turns out I have had some kind of bacteria or something like that, and that I contracted for a number of potential reasons. But anyway, it's there. Now I am on a protocol to get rid of it. I feel pretty much 100% now, and I am extremely excited, actually, to dive back in. When you're in bed all the time, you really have no desire to do anything other than really watch movies. So I watched the Lord of the Rings trilogy. I watched the Hobbit trilogy, amongst other things, to buy my time. Last thing I was interested in is world events. So needless to say, you go 2 weeks without following Middle East news, except for here and there, you have quite a bit to catch up with. And of course, in the midst of that, you've got the formation of what I call the Suicide Squad, which is essentially what they are, these four unbelievably just terrible representatives of the United States that have formed together in order to push back against one of the best presidents of the United States we've ever had, pro-freedom, pro-constitution, pro-security, pro-God, I would even say, pro-Israel, pro-sane national security and foreign relations, and they're pushing back against them because essentially they are against this great nation, and they're against the very founding of this great nation, even though they might reference a certain activity back in the 1700s, if they feel like it suits them, as we're going to get into in just a minute. So, but be sure to subscribe to the podcast. Search Mideast, one word, Mideast News Brief on your favorite podcasting platform, and you should be able to find us. Also, you can get the show notes and the articles, everything we've referenced here, at MideastNewsBrief.com, or you can go to CGMRadio.com and click on Mideast News Brief to get that as well. So I was not planning on talking about this today. I actually missed this on Twitter yesterday, but I had someone alert me to it this morning, and I really cannot help but talk about it. Look, I'm honestly really tired of Representative Ilhan Omar. I don't know about you. I am tired of hearing her voice. I'm tired of seeing her face. I am I'm so done with her and her, oh my gosh, her hatred for our country, her anti-Semitism, her just horrible and vile language, and even the latest, her just blatant racism, where she came out and said that we need to profile white men because they're the ones who commit the most murder in this country or something like that. I mean, it was just amazing. And even if you do believe in profiling Muslims, let's say you believe that, that isn't necessarily racism. Remember, Islam is not a race. Islam is a religion. And even bigger than that, Islam is an entire political social, cultural ideology with a religious component. That's what Islam is. So this whole idea of if you think we should pay special attention to Muslim countries or even special attention to Muslims, that is not racism. Now, you could make an argument back that, no, it's wrong, we shouldn't do that, blah, 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 that's religious discrimination, whatever. You can make that argument. We can have that discussion. But that is not racism. Banning insurance from Muslim countries is not racism. That has nothing to do with race. It has everything to do with the fact that Islamic terrorists have been attacking us. And there appears to be a trend. Right? If there was a country full of Nazis, I would want that country banned from immigrating to the U.S. Now, I'm not calling all Muslims, you know, terrorists or whatever. I'm not, because that's just simply not true. But you get the idea here. If there are nations full of people that are hostile to the U.S. and have dangerous ideology, such as Somalia, from where, of course, the great Ilhan Omar heralds from, why do we want people coming from there when those people are taught to hate us and to hate our values? That's not racism. It has nothing to do with race. It has everything to do with ideology and values. If you've listened to this long enough, you know that I believe there is one race, the human race. Yes, there are many different ethnicities, but there is one race, the human race, and that alone should bring us together and make what we call racism, which really should maybe be better called ethnicism, stupid. I mean, the biological difference between someone with lighter colored skin and darker colored skin is unbelievably minimal if you look at the science behind it. So look. But what it is, we know it's not racism, but she uses that word in order to advance her demonic political agenda and then turn around, and she herself actually commits acts of racism over and over and over again. So do you know what? I want to see her gone. I want to see her absolutely out of the U.S. Congress. And I mentioned this on Twitter at Mideast Briefing, that you can follow me at Mideast Briefing. Mentioned this on Twitter, I believe last week, that I think that her time in Congress is short. I did. I've had this feeling that her time in Congress is short, that she is an enemy of the United States. She is a vile, demonic manifestation of everything that Satan has for this country. Not what God has for this country. And look, when I say this, I believe God has good for this country. What I mean by that is not that no matter what, God's just going to bless it and like America is some kind of new Israel or something like that. Not at all. I believe God has good for this country in that he wants to transform it and bring us to repentance and turn us to righteousness, turn us back to Christ, which will then in turn be a conduit to his blessing. So let me make it very clear that there's a process. If you know, like what God told Israel, I believe we can see similar things to us. If my people who are called by my name will humble themselves, pray, seek my face, turn from their wicked ways, I will hear from heaven, forgive their sin, heal their land. My eyes will be open, my ears attentive to the prayers offered in this place. All right, that's how God operates, and I see no reason why, if he promised that to Israel, and I understand with Israel he has a special covenant, right? But in the past, even here in America, if you look at the history of the Great Awakenings, that's what happened. That's what people did, and that was the blessing that they received. And America became a missions launching center to bring the good news of Jesus Christ all across the world. Okay, I wasn't planning on talking about all of that, but this was really encouraging when it was sent to me just this morning. And I got to say, I think, I trust that what this guy is saying is true. Now, y'all know I'm pretty critical of Islam. I don't believe in Islam, and I believe it is a dangerous political movement. Really more of it's a political movement more than any kind of religious ideology. The religious aspect of it fuels the political aspect of it, right? Because if you make all of these promises of paradise, just like with the Japanese did with the kamikazes in World War II, like if you make all the, you indoctrinate people, make all these promises of paradise, right? They're more likely to do your dirty work for you, which is, of course, killing others for the advancement of the global domination of this particular religion. That being said, there are Muslims, a part of the Muslim reform movement, that want to turn Islam into a basically non-political entity. They are against political Islam. They're against it. And they are patriots, like Dr. Zudi Jasser, who heads the Muslim reform movement. He is a patriot, no question. Unfortunately, this is a small percentage of Muslims, but nevertheless, they exist. Well, one of the most prolific, if not most prolific, Muslim reformer is Imam Muhammad Tahiri. He's considered the Imam of Peace. I have seen videos with him. He's quite fascinating. He, of course, is very pro-Islam. He's very pro his brand of Islam. And so, of course, I reject that categorically. That being said, he has said he does appear to be a genuine promoter of peace, of liberty. He has even come out against the Islamic immigration into Europe and said that basically Christian nations need to defend themselves against it. So this ain't your standard fair Muslim Democrat from the U.S. Here's what he said on Twitter yesterday at 11:23 a.m. This thread, by the way, I retweeted this at Mideast Briefing. It's one of my latest tweets as of Friday, July 26, 2019, 11:44 a.m. Eastern Time. This thread will be one of the most important threads I make on Twitter. The illegal case behind this will be exposed with full transparency and full details. For now, I direct the following information to any tags Trump, Pence, Kushner, Trump Jr., and Sean Hannity. And here's what he says. If you go down, he says, I have sources for what I will say, and they are solid rock authentic. Many officials will criticize me for making this public, but I have a duty to do so. The public needs to know. I understand the potential consequences of this threat, and I accept them. Excuse me. I am willing to go to the fullest extent with this matter, even if I'm required to testify in Congress. Oh, wouldn't that be a beautiful day? But I'm getting to it. Just wait. This is the beginning of the uncovering of what could be a giant scandal. The sensitive details of this matter will be shared in private upon request. Boy, I wish I could have him on the show. Maybe I should ask him, Michael, what do you think? You think I should ask the Imam of Peace to come on the show?
You can try.
Doesn't hurt. All he can say is no, or all he can do is like miss my tweet. A congresswoman is communicating indirectly through an individual with Qatar. The people she is talking to are a group close to Amir. Oh, a congresswoman is communicating indirectly through an individual with Qatar. The people she is talking to are a group close to the Amir. Interesting. This, of course, he has not named this congresswoman, but if there's any indicator from my intro, you can guess who it is. This congresswoman has confirmed to the above group of Qataris that the recent investigations into her cases will not end well for her. What? Boy, that's a bit of a different take than the facade, the anti-American, prideful, just evil smirks and just... you can just see how evil this woman is. Very, very different what she's saying in private than the facade that she puts out in public. I'm going to read that again. This is amazing. This congresswoman has confirmed to the above group of Qataris that the recent investigations into her cases will not end well for her. Wow. If she really believes that, and Imam Tahidi is a very reliable source, so I'm very careful before I give credence to anything. Mark my words, this speaks volumes that this guy is willing to come out and say this. They also fear that she's in trouble. Now they are coming after several people. I am one of those people, and their plan is as follows. Okay, I can get into that in just a second. But what investigations? Why would she fear that she's in trouble? Well, there has been a fantastic investigation, just thorough investigation into the claims that Ilhan Omar committed immigration fraud by marrying her brother. You know, not that she was actually engaged in any kind of incest or anything like that, but it was beneficial to help him basically become a U.S. citizen. And just committed flat-out marriage fraud, flat-out illegal. No way she should be in Congress. And interestingly enough, so the powerlineblog.com, and I tweeted this. I'll link to this in the show notes. I also tweeted it out last week. I have not read actually all five columns. I have read the most recent one. July 18th, 2019. And let me tell you something, this is thorough. The evidence is overwhelming. I mean, beyond a reasonable doubt. Like, I believe she committed marriage immigration fraud. This is big. This is really big. Let me just read the intro, and then you can go and you can read more because it's a lot of information I can't go over here. I would like to actually dedicate a show at some point in the future to all of this. It's a fascinating story, and it's an incredibly important story because we have an enemy of the United States who, fascinatingly, will not condemn terrorist groups, will not condemn female genital mutilation, FGM, and instead dances around and has actually invented a very clever way to not have to specifically condemn those things. It's bizarre. It's like by virtue of the fact that she's asked the question, it's racism. It's Islamophobia. Now, let me tell you something, right? Let's say there was dude after dude, lady after lady, that was blowing themselves up in the name of Christ, killing innocent people. And this is happening over and over and over and over and over again, year after year, country after country, all across the world. That there are groups of Christian terrorists, right, that are shooting rockets at Jews. They're invading countries. There are all these Christian terrorist groups, right? And let's say I'm a Christian congressman in the United States. And we see it week after week, time after time, nonstop, people in the name of Christ killing other people. And let's say I get asked this question. What is my response going to be? Is it going to be, oh, this is, you know, I'm not even going to answer that question because we shouldn't expect that, you know, Christians, why would Christians be asked about this and not Muslims or not Jews or whatever? But should that be my response? You know what my response would be? I would take every opportunity I could get to say, no, I do condemn these acts. And not only that, this is contrary to New Testament teaching. How do I know that? Jesus says in Matthew 5, love your enemies, pray for those who persecute you. The scripture says, bless those who curse you, bless and do not curse. Do not repay evil for evil, right? But vengeance is God, and let God be the avenger, right? Talk about the Avengers, right? God is the avenger. He's the head avenger. Over and over again, when Jesus sent his apostles out, he sent to spread the kingdom of God. He didn't send them out with swords. He sent them out with words and the Holy Spirit. So I would gladly take opportunity after opportunity after opportunity after opportunity to debunk the idea that these people were doing it in the name of Christ. Or we're doing it legitimately in the name of Christ. But that's not what she does. She has invented a way, and I've seen the video. Maybe I should play it, but I don't have it in front of me right now. She has invented a way to dodge the question. And it's very telling. And not only that, given the fact that she has raised money for the Council of American Islamic Relations, which is essentially a front group for the Hamas terrorist group, that's all the more reason why she needs to be asked this question. It's insane. In four intensely reported investigative columns, here, 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 and here, David Steinberg has explored the evidence suggesting that Ilhan Omar entered into a sham marriage with her brother in 2009. This is his fifth. He titles it, Meet Layla Elmi, the missing link showing Ilhan Omar married her brother. Drawing on his research, interviews, and social media evidence, he makes the case that Omar has engaged in a variety of fraudulent activities and willful misrepresentations related to her marital arrangements. And then the article goes on up at powerlineblog.com, July 18th. Again, I will link to this in the show notes at MideastNewsBrief.com. All right, back to the Imam of Peace. But that is essentially what Imam Tahiti is referring to. They fear she's in trouble. She fears she's in trouble. Now they're coming after several people. I am one of those people, Imam Tahiti, and their plan is as follows. The congresswoman told the group of Qatari officials who have invested in her that at Speaker Pelosi is happy that she is being investigated. I have followed politics a long time, and Nancy Pelosi has always been on the far left wacko fringe of the Democratic Party, Michael. Nancy Pelosi has been on the far left fringe. And they are making, the Suicide Squad is making her look like a moderate. It's mind-blowing. I find myself rooting. I've never rooted for Nancy Pelosi. I find myself doing that now. At Speaker Pelosi is happy that she is being investigated because recently they had rebelled against her. Also, she hates the pressure coming onto the party because of her. Yeah, there's a lot of pressure, especially against the Jews. especially against Israel. We'll get to that in a moment. The plan of this congresswoman is to make all of this go away and strike a deal with Speaker Pelosi to put her cases aside if she puts the case of this congresswoman aside and ignores it. This is Qatar's goal in D.C. with regards to this congresswoman. This congresswoman, along with a Palestinian female activist from Brooklyn, New York, agreed on diverting the attention by planning to seek the assistance of At The Intercept, Al Jazeera, and the Middle East Eye to fabricate the following scandal. They want to claim that all of those criticizing this particular congresswoman are paid by Saudis and the UAE, and that it is a collusion against the congresswoman. All kinds of collusion going on. They're planning on separating me and At Adel Naz in one case, who is a Adel Malka Nazarian. She's a journalist, filmmaker, basically for religious freedom, yada, yada, in one case, and At Donald Trump Jr. and the UAE in another. The reason they chose At Adel Naz, out of all the people who criticize this congresswoman, it is because of her work picks with VP Mike Pence, and to show them in the fabricated articles. Their basis for this would be Qatari officials said so, when it is all false information. The congresswoman in question tried to get me to say that I am being funded by the UAE and Saudi Arabia to smear her, to then turn it into an international issue. I have the full text her middle person sent through a leak, and she knows this is not the first leak. And I'm going to share this text from the leak, and then you can read the rest of the thread if you would like. But it says, "Dear Imam Tahiti, I'm such and such and wanted to share with you important information that I was made aware of. So-and-so has forwarded a secret request to the Qatari government via a something businessman seeking their help to fabricate information that would discredit your reputation using Qatari-controlled and funded media outlets in the U.S. and U.K. The secret request was delivered during a private meeting in Manhattan between the businessman and Qatari Sheikh Al Thani. The Qatari government has accepted so-and-so's request and promised to implement it very soon." They want to accuse Saudi Arabia and UAE of operating in D.C. to smear her and accuse me, At Donald Trump Jr., and others who have come after her, such as Tom Fitton, of being part of an international operation collusion in America. So that is what is going on. This is about Omar, and he tags her at the end there, actually, at the very end. If you go to the very end of the whole thread, he tags her. It's about her. She's apparently scared. She's apparently worried. I'm wondering when the Learjet is gonna show up somewhere around D.C. and we're never gonna see Omar again. I'd be like, see ya. Even if we should prosecute her, I mean, that would be such a mess. I think it'd be better if she just left. Leave while you can. If you're really worried, Ilhan Omar, who's never going to listen to this, but if you're really worried, leave. Leave. Go. You are not wanted here. It's not because of your gender. It's not because of your skin color. It's not even because of your religion. It's because you hate our country. You hate Israel and the Jews. Here's the thing. God does not. I think there are things about our country God is not happy with. I guarantee you that our country is not perfect. But you know what? There are things about every country, even Israel, that God is not happy with. So here's the reality. Your hatred that you have for this country, your hatred that you have for Israel, is not reflected actually by God. And I don't believe, and I don't actually believe that it is supported by most Americans. There is a fascinating poll out by the Hudson Institute that released some interesting polling data that's not real good for Miss Omar. Poll. Most Americans support Israel, say BDS movement is anti-Semitic. Now, remember, I spent a lot of time on a mom's thread, so I'm skipping a story, but it was basically how Ilhan Omar invoked the Boston Tea Party, basically compared Israel to Nazi Germany. Basically, there was a House resolution that she put forward, House Resolution 496, basically affirming our right to boycott. And of course, when she thinks boycott, she thinks Israel, because she hates Israel, she hates Jews. Essentially, House Resolution 496, which has gone nowhere and will never go anywhere, thank God, basically compared Israel with Nazi Germany. It's absolutely insane. And the sick irony to that is what? Nazi Germany specifically promoted the boycott of Jews. You cannot make this stuff up. She said, we must support efforts to end the occupation and achieve two-state solution. We've gone over that a million times. The occupation stuff is just nonsense. We cannot simultaneously want peace, then openly oppose peaceful means to hold our allies accountable. She said that Americans of conscience have a proud history of participating in boycotts to advocate for human rights abroad, including boycotting Nazi Germany from 33 to 41 in response to the dehumanization of the Jewish people in the lead-up to the Holocaust. She's trying to protect her reputation a little bit there. Omar said in the resolution introduced Tuesday. Again, she compares boycotting Israel to boycotting Nazis, or compares the revolutionaries throwing tea into Boston Harbor with boycotting Israel. Okay, the revolutionaries were against tyrannical actions. Israel is a beacon of, like, freedom in the Middle East, you know, like freedom, this whole idea that the surrounding Muslim countries really can't grasp a hold of. Here is a video from Fox News specifically in response to Omar's just awful statements. This is Eugene Kantorovich from George Mason University. Michael, cut one.
So when you see Ilhan Omar proposing what's called a BDS, which is boycott, divest, and sanction of Israel, and liken it to boycotting Nazi Germany, you say what?
It's amazing. She's not only comparing Israel to Nazi Germany, which is absurd, she's using it to promote policies to actually discriminate against Jews. And that's what a boycott of Israel is. It's not just a boycott of the Israeli government. She's talking about justifying and legitimizing the right to discriminate against Jews because of their relationship to Israel.
Absolutely. Well, this is something Democrats previously have been against. Here's Leader Schumer and Speaker Pelosi slamming the BDS movement in the last couple years. Watch.
When the world treats everybody one way and the Jew or the Jewish state another way, there's only one word for it: anti-Semitism.
Yeah, come on, Chuck.
Call out the BDS movement for what it is.
We must also be vigilant against bigoted or dangerous ideologies masquerading as policy. And that includes BDS.
Come on, Nancy.
So why won't Speaker Pelosi call Ilhan Omar into her office and say, this is anti-Semitic?
Yeah, the Democrats are faced with a tough choice now. The Democratic Party has acknowledged that boycotts of Israel are anti-Semitic, as have the legislatures of 27 states in overwhelmingly bipartisan votes. But now they're torn between their fear and desire to cater to their far-left progressive wing and what they really believe in. And I think we're really at a fork in the road here where they're going to have to make hard choices.
So is this a resolution that will just die on the vine? It's something Ilhan Omar believes in and a few others? Or is this an indication that the modern Democrat Party, captured by leftists, is embracing anti-Semitism.
This resolution is probably not going to get a vote, but it's still going to probably shift the direction of the party. The House was probably going to vote on a resolution condemning boycotts of Israel, and I think part of the
agenda
is to make a deal where they let that one die and they let this one die, and so they're just not going to say anything about anti-Semitism.
So the House was going to vote to condemn the BDS movement and anti-Semitism. Instead, this gets proposed and they do nothing? So have we lost a bipartisan consensus of the support of Israel?
I think we saw that already when, in response to Ilhan Omar's extraordinary anti-Semitic comments about the Jews brainwashing America and about dual loyalties of politicians who support Israel, instead of passing a resolution, they were going to pass a resolution to condemn anti-Semitism in the House, and they couldn't. They had to make it a resolution to condemn everything bad.
It's amazing. By the way, Ilhan Omar, when she was running, said she did not support BDS on the campaign. Now she goes into Congress and shows her true colors.
She's very strategic, and I think part of her strategy is to pull the Democratic Party hard into the Jeremy Corbyn direction of anti-Semitism. The Labour Party was a normal party like the Democratic Party 10 years ago, and it has completely transformed. What we're seeing here is not just a slippery slope towards Corbynization. We're kind of halfway down that slope already. We're at the bottom, maybe.
Al Monitor reported that Democratic leaders are planning to push an anti-BDS resolution this week. Elliot Engel, Democratic New York, the chair of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, will hold a vote on the bipartisan anti-BDS resolution introduced by Bradley Schneider, Democrat, and Lee Zeldin, New York, Republican. Engel was one of the few Democrats to strongly denounce Omar's anti-Semitic comments, saying the congresswoman, quote, invoked a vile and anti-Semitic slur. This was when she said politicians support Israel because they're paid off. Her infamous, it's all about the Benjamins remark. Omar told Al Monitor that despite the bipartisan support behind both the anti-BDS resolution and the military aid bill, she plans to vote no on both. Both during and after the meeting, Representative Zeldin hit back at Omar for her support of BDS. This is a fantastic clip. I'm going to let it play the full way through. It's about 5 minutes. Bear with me. Where do we at on time right now, Michael? How long has the show been going?
37 minutes.
37, okay. This might be a bit of a longer episode. I've been gone a long time. I probably won't play the whole thing, but let's just play maybe a couple minutes. This is Representative Lee Zeldin just killing it on
BDS. Thank you,
BDS.
Mr. Chairman, and I appreciate you bringing this en bloc up today. I fully support this, and it's important for me to point out a few things. As my colleague who just spoke used the frequent use of the words honestly and honest, let's just get to a lot of what's left out. So the BDS movement has not distanced itself from Hamas, a designated foreign terrorist organization.
How about that?
BDS supporters individually are not distancing themselves from Hamas either. It is wrong to be blaming all Israeli and Palestinian violence, quote, as being due to an occupation. Last Friday, Fatih Hamad, a senior Hamas official, called upon Palestinians worldwide to kill all Jews. This is a senior Hamas official just before the weekend. During a closed meeting in October 2017 between Hamas chief Sinwar and Gazan youth about reconciling with the Fatah movement, Sinwar stated that the time spent discussing recognition of Israel is over, and now Hamas will instead discuss when they will wipe Israel out. Hamas uses women and children as human shields. They declare jihad as an obligation. They deny humanitarian aid to their own people. They deny human rights. Launching rockets from Gaza into Israel, killing innocent civilians. Tens of thousands of rockets in Lebanon being ready to be launched by Hezbollah. Existential threats to Israel all around it. Our greatest ally in the Middle East. One, that there's been a historic relationship between our two nations, a beacon of hope and freedom and liberty in a region of the world that is filled with challenges. We want to be neutral arbiters. Let's not deny our right and our duty to also be honest brokers. To spend an entire time in justifying opposition to HRES 246, based off of everything that's wrong is all due to the Israeli occupation. Why not point out the fact that in 2008, Israel offered to withdraw from 93% of Judea and Samaria in the West Bank?
Remember that?
Or what about our students on college campuses right now from coast to coast being targeted with blatant anti-Semitism in the name of BDS? Or taking into consideration the founder of BDS and all of his blatant anti-Semitism? Or the Palestinian authorities pay to slay. They financially reward terrorism. They treat you to a state funeral. They will rename football stadiums after you. We want to use honesty in our remarks. We'll give you a whole lot more.
I think that kind of says it all. That sums up the BDS movement. If you're friends with Hamas, a foreign terrorist organization that specifically targets and kills innocent Israelis and whoever else might be in the area at the time, it has gone beyond a peaceful political movement to a violent political movement if you are aligned with terrorist organizations, and which is why BDS should be completely condemned. Which, thankfully, it has. I've got some good news. House Resolution 246 passed 398-17. On July 23rd, like 3 days ago. This resolution opposes the global boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement and other efforts targeting Israel, and states that BDS undermines the possibility for a negotiated solution to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. The resolution urges both sides to return to direct negotiations and expresses support for a solution resulting in the state of Israel existing alongside a democratic Palestinian state. And I'm going to have to agree with that last part. I'm sorry. Disagree with that last part. I don't think the two-state solution is the answer, because the Palestinian Authority is a terrorist organization. Hamas is a terrorist organization. And you don't give states to terrorist organization. There are one-state solution options that we have that will not engulf Israel into basically becoming another Palestinian state after Jordan, which was essentially the original two-state solution. Because remember, the League of Nations gave Israel today what we know as Israel and Jordan. And then in 1922 at the San Remo Conference, they stripped away 77% of what they had promised to Jews. This is all very well documented. And actually a research project I'm working on and will eventually bring to all of you, cut away 77%. That became Transjordan, which is known as Jordan, and they were left with Israel. And now they want to cut away half of the 22% of what's left of Israel and give it to the Palestinians, to the Palestinian Arabs. So essentially, it would be, next to nothing of what was originally promised them. But that being said, what I love about House Resolution 246 is that it specifically condemns the BDS movement. And also, just as a quick aside, if you look at the polling data I alluded to before I switched subjects real quick and decided to go over the story I wasn't going to go over, most Americans support Israel and says that the BDS movement is anti-Semitic. This is from the Hudson Institute, 1,000 likely 2020 general election voters. 51% of those surveyed held a favorable opinion of Israel. That's only 51% is a little disturbing to me, but listen to this. Only 21% held an unfavorable opinion. An even greater number, 75%, agreed it is in America's interest to have Israel as its closest ally in the Middle East. So when it comes to foreign policy, which is most really most important when it comes to the general election, foreign policy, 75% of likely voters agree that it is in America's interest to have Israel as its closest ally. That is big. And there's actually a lot more in this poll I'll link to at MideastNewsBrief.com if you want to get into it. But it is great news for those who love Israel. It is great news for Trump that Trump can basically stump on the campaign trail a strong, unequivocal, unabashed, unhindered, or any other synonyms to those words I can come up with, pro-Israel foreign policy. That is a very good thing. And so he can do that. He's got the data to back up his ability to do that, and he can move forward. All right. I want to transition now away from the Omar Imam of Peace insanity, and I want to talk about what is going on across the pond in Great Britain. Pardon the terrible accent. Michael, some transition music, please, would you? No, I'm not going to continue to speak in a British accent. Yes, you're welcome. But I am fascinated. I don't know about you guys. I'm fascinated. I'm excited. Kind of in the same way when Trump was elected president. I was both really excited, but I was also just kind of fascinated to watch this guy, right? And see what happens. Well, we just had something very interesting happen across the pond, in case you haven't heard. Boris Johnson, yes, that Boris Johnson, is now the Prime Minister of the UK. Are you kidding me? No, I am not kidding you, ladies and gentlemen. Boris Johnson is the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom. And that, in my mind, is really, really cool. Even though, I agree, he's a mixed bag. I don't agree with him on everything. He's made some past statements I would definitely disagree with. But that being said, overall, not only is it going to be a lot of fun to watch, which is actually the least important of it all, I think it's going to be very good for Israel, very good for foreign policy, very good for U.S.-Britain relations. It is going to be great for both of our countries. As you may know, Boris Johnson, he is pro-Brexit. He's the leader of the Conservative Party in the UK. He replaced Theresa May when she announced on May 24th of this year that she was going to resign as leader of the Conservative Party. And when that happened, a special election was held. The general membership of the party basically elected by postal ballot Boris Johnson. He won 2-1, overwhelmingly in the Conservative Party over Jeremy Hunt. So who is this guy? Who is Boris Johnson, in case you're not very familiar? Well, he was the mayor of London from 2009 to 2016. He was the UK foreign minister from 2016 to July 2018. He was a member of parliament from 2001 to 2008 in the Conservative Party. He was a reporter and columnist in the 80s and 90s, as well as editor of The Spectator from 2001 to 2005. He's a colorful conservative figure that has said a lot of pretty, like I mentioned, pretty politically incorrect things. Anyone else see where this is going? Anyone else see a little bit of a parallel from across the Atlantic? I think you just might. I know that I do. So what are some of the more colorful things that he said, right? This is news, so you got to go to the, you know, most colorful, most interesting headline grabbing statements. You can say a million wonderful things, but if you say one crazy thing, then that's what gets the headlines. So, but here's kind of a taste of what they're talking about and the things that they don't like what Boris Johnson has said. So, for example, in 2002, while criticizing the UK's Africa policy, he referred to Africans as pickaninnies. It's apparently an inappropriate thing to say. In 2007, he like... Excuse me, I am still recovering. He likened Hillary Clinton to a sadistic nurse in a mental hospital. I don't know why I find that rather funny that he came out and said that. It's really not that funny, but for whatever reason, maybe it's recovering from sickness. I find it quite funny when I think of Hillary Clinton as a sadistic nurse in a mental hospital. In 2016, Johnson suggested that President Barack Obama opposed Brexit because of his, quote, ancestral dislike of Britain owing to his part Kenyan heritage. Kenya was formerly a British colony, of course. There's the whole birther idea that he was actually born in Kenya, not in the United States, and all of that. So, of course, I don't know that he actually believes that, but of course, it's Boris Johnson. So he's trying to be salacious and funny. In a 2018 column, Johnson described Muslim women who wear burqas as looking like, quote, letterboxes and bank robbers. For him to say something like that in 2018, wow. Wow, wow. So I was kind of surprised to see that one. So look, a colorful guy, to say the least. He's obviously willing to say what's on his mind, but how will he fare with the Jewish state, right? This is a Mideast News Brief, so we got to talk about, okay, what's it going to look like with the Jewish state, his relationship with Trump? This is 5 Jewish things to know about Boris Johnson. This is from Non-Lipshiz, I think is how you say his name, from the Jerusalem Post. No matter their political affiliation, all sides can agree that Boris Johnson, who has secured his Conservative Party's vote to become the UK's next prime minister, is a colorful character. And he goes into some of that. But for British Jews, Johnson is a mixed bag because of his record on Israel, his own Jewish roots, and his apparent disregard for how many Britons expect senior politicians to speak about religious minorities. Number one, Brexit on one side, Labour on the other. Unlike Theresa May, previous UK Prime Minister, Johnson is a hardliner and longtime supporter of Brexit. In other words, he has committed himself to getting the UK out of the EU no matter what, with or without a deal with EU officials. I'm not sure if that's totally true, if he'll do a no-deal Brexit. We'll see. All I know is, if the media says the sky is going to fall and the world is going to collapse without a no-deal Brexit, do you know what that means? You really probably don't have to worry about it. Maybe there'll be a blip in the economy or something like that. But if they all want to be a part of Brexit because they're essentially globalists and they don't want the UK to have national sovereignty because of unelected bureaucrats in Brussels can tell them what to do, tell them what their immigration policy should be and whatever else. If they're all saying that it's going to rain acid if the UK leaves the EU without a deal, it's baloney. And you don't have to listen to it or worry about it. Anyway, he says this is risky because a no-deal Brexit would likely slow down the economy. And I think he's got a point here, would likely slow down the economy, which in turn could increase the chances that Labour Party leader, no, we don't want this guy, Jeremy Corbyn, is elected after Johnson. Oh, Jeremy Corbyn. Many British Jews believe that this would pose an existential threat to their community, because of the explosion of anti-Semitism in labor since Corbyn became its leader in 2015. My voice is getting tired, Michael. I haven't done this in a few weeks. I need a video to give my voice a break, but I don't have one until the end of this article. Okay, real quick. I'll actually provide a link to Corbyn's anti-Semitic statements that are documented. But for now, let me share one with you from 2009. Do you want to hear something very interesting that Jeremy Corbyn said in all this talk? Let's listen to what Jeremy Corbyn said to his supporters, enthusiastic supporters in 2009. Tomorrow evening, it will be my pleasure, my honor, to host an event in Parliament where our friends from Hezbollah, that would be, yes, that Hezbollah, the Lebanese terrorist group, our friends from Hezbollah will be speaking. I've also invited friends from Hamas to come and speak. Friends from Hamas. As well, unfortunately, the Israelis would not allow them to travel here, so it's going to be only friends from Hezbollah. The idea that an organization that is dedicated towards the good of the Palestinian people and bringing about long-term peace and social justice and political justice in the whole region should be labeled as a terrorist organization by the British government is a really big, big historical mistake. That tells you everything you need to know about why this guy should never be the UK Prime Minister, or even in Parliament, to cozy up to Hamas and Hezbollah like this and call them his friends and saying that they are partners of peace when they target innocent civilians for murder. It is just beyond the pale. Now, here's the thing. I was actually going to play the video for you. That's what I was going to do. I was like, I found this quote, and I'm like, oh, I want to play the video so they can hear it from Jeremy Corbyn himself, straight from the horse's mouth. But you know what? I clicked on the YouTube link that this video, this quote is from, and the video has been removed. Isn't that fascinating? Isn't that fascinating? You know what? Here's a simple reality. Big tech should be all about exposing terrorist politicians, no matter their party, no matter what they want. It reminds me of when a opposition political party in Sweden was being accused of all types of like racism and anti-Semitism. And so the opposition party put out a YouTube video showing how the party in power, showing their history and how actually they were the ones that were anti-Semitic and racist and all that. And you know what YouTube did? Took it down. Why would YouTube not want to allow people to be exposed for their anti-Semitism, their bigotry, their violence and hatred? They care more about supporting their political friends than they do about exposing this garbage. It's unfathomable. It's unconscionable to me that they want to hide and protect anti-Semitism, terrorists. It is that they partner with China and Muslim nations to root out dissidents. They should be helping to promote free speech. They could be an avenue of promoting freedom in these areas. And instead, they aid and abet autocrats and terrorist regimes. It's unbelievable. So I was going to play that video for you, but it's not there. But that's AD. That's who we do not want in power. That being said, I don't know that it's going to be as big of an economic hit that they're worried about. Who knows? And maybe we could help mitigate that by a solid unilateral trade deal with Great Britain. So, again, just because they say a no-deal Brexit will be the end of the world, doesn't mean it will be. All right, so number one, Brexit or labor, right? Number two, Boris feels Jewish sometimes. This is interesting. Johnson's maternal great-grandfather, Elias Avery Lowe, was a Moscow-born Jew to a textile merchant. Johnson confirmed this in a 2007 interview for the Jewish Chronicle. Quote, I feel Jewish when I feel the Jewish people are threatened or under attack. That's when it sort of comes out, Johnson said. When I suddenly get a whiff of anti-Semitism, it's then that you feel angry and protective. I mean, if that's true, I can certainly concur with those feelings. That, of course, is a good thing. If when the Jews feel threatened, he feels Jewish, that's a good thing. So he feels Jewish sometimes. Number three, still Jews had complaints when he was mayor. Throughout his tenure as London mayor, Johnson consistently ignored pleas from Jewish groups to ban the infamous pro-Palestinian Al-Quds Day marches through London, events that have featured calls to kill Jews along with other anti-Semitic language and imagery. It was only last year that London police said they would intervene at the event to stop Hezbollah flags from flying. The move came with Sadiq Khan, a labor politician and practicing Muslim, as mayor. That guy, there's a guy that needs to go. Sadiq Khan's got to go. In 2014, Johnson called Israel's attack on Hamas in Gaza disproportionate and, quote, ugly and tragic, adding that it will not do Israel any good in the long run. So, as you may recall, in 2014, there was a big skirmish between a 50-day skirmish between Israel and Gaza, and they say it was disproportionate because more Gazans died than Israelis died. But you don't do a body count on each side to determine the justness of a particular war. You just simply don't. You got to look at the war itself. Who started the war and how are both sides operating themselves within that war? And I mean, that Israel was just dragged through the mud in the press for defending themselves. The 50-day war was without a doubt a media crime. When you've got terrorists targeting Israelis and Israel responds and you get the coverage they did. It was just, so I would disagree sharply with Johnson on that. I think he was wrong about that. Now, he apparently tried to balance those remarks in the run-up to elections in the Conservative Party, which has seen a surge in support by Jews who have left Labor over its anti-Semitism problem, calling himself a, quote, passionate Zionist who, quote, loves the great country of Israel. British politicians rarely call themselves Zionists, partly because of the actions of Zionist militants against British targets in pre-state Israel. Quote, it's totally unacceptable that innocent Israeli civilians should face the threat of rocket fire and bombardment from Gaza, he said in a July 10th interview with the Jewish News. Well, that's good. That's a step in the right direction. He made a statement recently, specifically about the 2014 disproportionate statement where he took a very pro-Israel stance. I won't read the whole thing, but he said, look, Israel has a right to respond. Israel has a right to defend itself. Israel has a right to meet force with force. I absolutely agree with that. But all I was saying is I believe in Israel, which is interesting. I believe in Israel. I support Israel. I will always support Israel. That wasn't what he was saying, but that's okay. I just joined with those who say, I want the Israeli response to be proportionate. And I mean, look, I would agree with that. But to say that it was disproportionate is not accurate. Not that did Israel do everything perfect? No, who does in a war? Who does everything perfect in a war? Again, you know it's anti-Semitism when you have one standard for the Jews and another standard for everybody else. And oh, by the way, I shared this on Twitter, but it is just absolutely amazing to me. Absolutely amazing to me that Israel was singled out as a women's rights abuser at the UN. Oh, and do you know who condemned Israel as a human rights abuser toward women? Yeah, like Iran and Saudi Arabia voted in the UN to condemn Israel as a rights abuser to women. You can't make this stuff up in the UN, quote, Human Rights Council. It is absolutely, it's absolutely beyond the pale. Absolutely beyond the pale. So that is a side note. But you know it's anti-Semitism when women in Iran get flogged or thrown in jail or potentially killed for not wearing a hijab. When women in Saudi Arabia have to wear the full burqa, can't go out of the house without a man, without a relative. And you're going to condemn Israel as the like worst human rights abuser in the world for women. It is absolutely unfathomable. But that's why the UN is a joke. That's why the UN quote Human Rights Council is an even bigger joke. So yeah, we want it to be proportionate, but don't put a standard on the Jews that you don't apply to everybody. All right, so what about when Johnson was foreign secretary? Despite a slew of pro-Israel statements and actions, Johnson is widely seen as responsible for getting the UK to help draft a UN Security Council resolution against Israel's settlement policy. Yes, this is when Obama dialed 2334 pound at the UN and stabbed Israel in the back. I had his crony, John Kerry, stab Israel in the back. Historically, the U.S., because we're sane, has let the Israelis and Palestinians work out their issues, not the UN. And any resolutions that come up in the UN that condemn Israel for their settlement policies has been met with a veto by the U.S. all throughout the Obama administration even. That type of garbage has been vetoed. Well, what did we do in December 2016 with UN Resolution 2334? As you might remember, we let it go. We abstained. And by abstaining, we endorsed a specific UN resolution against Israeli settlements, something we did not historically do and something that we should not do because it's not our place to do that. The Israelis and the Arabs can work that out on their own. And it's all with the assumption that the settlements are illegal. And those settlements are only illegal if the West Bank is truly occupied territory. It is not. Remember, it is disputed territory. It is not occupied. Israel gained that land back that was originally theirs in the first place in 1948, gained that land back in a defensive six-day war. Unfortunately, Boris Johnson was in favor of 2334. He's also a supporter of the nuclear deal. However, Johnson was the UK's first foreign secretary to pledge to vote against Item 7, a permanent UN Human Rights Council agenda item that singles out Israel for criticism. And that is really good news, that he recognizes that Israel gets its own line item on the agenda when it comes to human rights abuses. It is sick. It is disgusting. But it is anti-Semitic. It is Jew hatred. And it goes on every day at the UN that we so generously host in New York City. I really have mixed feelings. There's part of me that, I mean, really wants to see that building burn to the ground. There's another part of me that likes the fact that we can, like, kind of spy on everybody in the world right here on our own soil. There actually are some advantages to having the UN, even though I despise it, you know, especially when it comes to maybe negotiations with Americans abroad that have been captured or in prison for some reason and that kind of stuff. But I think there's a case to be made overall that the UN does not need to be here. That there really needs to be like a new UN. There needs to be a League of Nations. I think we need to, on some level, can the UN have a League of Nations of countries that actually go by the UN Human Rights Declaration, UN Declaration of Human Rights. We've got all of these terrorist countries on the UN Human Rights Council, but even more that are in the UN who don't abide by basic human rights. Why are we in league with these people? Why are we, quote, united with these people? Would we give ISIS a seat at the UN? We give, quote, the state of Palestine. We give Iran. I mean, might as well just give ISIS a seat at the UN if we're going to let those people, those countries have a seat at the UN. Anyway, that's another issue. Number five, call him the British Trump. In the early days of Donald Trump's presidency, Johnson spoke dismissively about the reality TV star turned politician, but the two have since built a positive relationship. On Tuesday, for example, Trump called Johnson a good man who is tough and smart. Like Trump, Johnson has excited his right-wing base with derogatory statements. Oh, well, hold on. I love how they call Trump a reality TV star turned politician. Isn't that interesting? They always do that. When that was actually a very small part of his entire career. He is a billionaire global real estate mogul. Unbelievably successful billionaire in real estate investment. But you know a story is derogatory toward Trump when they call him a reality TV star turned politician, as if he was on like an episode of Survivor, like back in 2005, and then he got real popular and became president. I mean, it's insane. So you know where this guy is coming from. And you'll see a second where this writer is coming from. So no, I don't get all of my, I don't get all of my articles from pro-Trump sources. Like Trump, this is interesting, Johnson has excited his right-wing base with derogatory statements about Muslims, which is making some British Jews uncomfortable. Of course, with Johnson, he's referring to the way women look in burqas. But what derogatory statements about Muslims is he specifically referring to? Oh, interesting. He doesn't give any. Are we talking about the ban from Muslim-majority nations? Well, I mean, that's not derogatory statements about Muslims. Is he talking about shutting down immigration from Muslims? That's actually not a derogatory statement about Muslims, all Muslims in general. It's the fact that we understand that it is Muslims that are coming into our country and committing terrorist attacks. That's not a derogatory statement about all Muslims. It's recognizing the reality that this is coming through the Muslim community. But anyway, of course, he doesn't give any examples. That's what he says. So now, why don't we hear from Trump himself about what he says about Boris Johnson. Michael, cut three.
Good man is going to be the Prime Minister of the UK now, Boris Johnson. Good man. He's tough and he's smart. They're saying Britain Trump. They call him Britain Trump. And people are saying that's a good thing. That they like me over there. That's what they wanted. That's what they need. That's what they need. He'll get it done. Boris is good. He's going to do a good job. I think Nigel's someplace in this audience. Where's Nigel? Where is he? Nigel Farage. He's here someplace. I saw him. I said, what is he doing here? He's a little older than most of you. Where is he? Nigel. Nigel. I'll tell you what. He got 32% of the vote from nowhere. Over in UK. Nigel. Thank you, Nigel.
That's amazing.
I said, what's Nigel doing here? He's a little older than you folks. But he did a great job, and I know he's going to work well with Boris. They're going to do some tremendous things.
I actually heard so that was a Turning Point USA event that Trump was speaking at, and I actually heard the interview that Charlie Kirk, who is president of Turning Point USA, did with Nigel Farage, and it was very good. And Nigel Farage said very clearly, if Boris Johnson goes pro-Brexit, I will be his best friend and ally. If he totters on Brexit, I'll be his worst enemy. That's where Farage came from. And Nigel Farage, 32% of the vote for someone who's considered, you know, some right-wing extremist because we shouldn't have mass immigration from Muslim countries. It's amazing. It's amazing. I think I think that they are going to be that Johnson and Farage will be a good team. We, of course, will see how that kind of comes out. But here's my prediction about Johnson. I think that Johnson could not have come on the scene at a better time, both for his country, for Israel, for America. The media is going to lie about him constantly. They're going to lie about him. They're going to trash him just like they do with Trump because he is pro-Brexit. The media is globalist. And again, they want the UK under the sovereignty of the European Union so unelected bureaucrats in Brussels can destroy their country. And they can get rich off of it. Second, I think he's one way or another going to lead his country back to sovereignty and out of the clutches, the claws and the fangs of Brussels, and that the EU will no longer be their overlords. And then three, I think he is going to be pro-Israel, and his arrival on the scene is fantastic for Trump's upcoming peace plan. Again, the economic portion has already been revealed, at least in part, and the political portion is likely going to be coming after the Israeli elections, which I think are September or October 17th. But I think September 17th. But either way, I know he said some statements in the past about Israel, a certain policy that I would vehemently disagree with. But overall, I think he's going to be very friendly to... I think he's going to be very friendly to the U.S., to Israel, and think about it. I mean, Trump, Boris Johnson, and Benjamin Netanyahu, who I think is going to win the election again, that is going to be quite a trio, quite a trio. All right. I want to end the broadcast today. How long have we been going, Michael?
An hour 19.
Hour 19. Okay, I'll make this quick. I've been trying to keep them at an hour, but I've been gone for a couple of weeks, and so this is a lot of fun to me. I hope you can tell I enjoy doing these shows. I enjoy doing them a lot, and so sometimes it's hard to stop, but I'm going to look at this, try to keep it at about 10 minutes, and then we'll end the show. I think this is important, historical perspective. What is the quote that he ends off with? History The writer William Faulkner famously observed, is not was, it is. So that's our quote of the week there. Quote of the week early for you. History is not was, it is. And I think his point here has to do with we have to look at history to know who we are dealing with now. We have to look at the history of a people, and it can give us an indication of who we're currently dealing with. And this is an article from the Jewish News Service, July 24th. The Mufti's War Against the Jews. Who is this guy? Mufti. How do you hear a guy named Mufti? And you go, oh, that's probably a nice guy. Yeah, his name's Mufti. He bakes muffins or something, you know, down on Drury Lane. But no. This Mufti isn't into baking muffins. You know what this Mufti liked doing? This Mufti liked exterminating Jews. Not only did he like exterminating Jews, he was really good friends with the greatest Jew exterminator of all time. Yes, that famous greatest Jewish exterminator of all time, the Führer himself, Adolf Hitler. This month marks the 45th anniversary of the death of Amin al-Husseini, the one-time Grand Mufti of Jerusalem and Nazi collaborator, hailed as a, quote, pioneer by current Palestinian Authority leader Mahmoud Abbas. How about that? Pioneer. Oh, he's a pioneer. Pioneer in Jew extermination? During World War II, al-Husseini raided SS regiments in the Balkans, promoted the Reich's propaganda in the Arab world toward death camps. And by the way, there's pictorial evidence of this as well that you can see for yourself when I link the story. And plotted the genocide of Middle Eastern Jewry. After he escaped justice, conventional wisdom has it that the Mufti ceased to be a political force in the post-war years. But conventional wisdom is wrong. Declassified CIA documents. Interesting. Why were they protecting this guy for so long? Many revealed for the first time, and a recent book tell a different story, one in which al-Husseini continued to be influential more than a quarter century after the war's end. Although he would never regain the power that he once wielded, the Mufti remained a force to be reckoned with. Intelligence agencies closely monitored him, and Arab regimes variously sought his support or his assassination. Through it all, he remained not only an unapologetic anti-Semite, but also an inveterate schemer. The Mufti's rise to power was itself owed to intrigues. The British, who ruled Mandate Palestine after the collapse of the Ottoman Empire, made al-Husseini the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem in 1921. Maybe aside from the British not granting the 13 colonies independence without a war, this may have been, in the history of the British Empire, one of the worst mistakes they ever made. Plenty of history here, but that's all I'll say. Making him both the country's highest Muslim cleric and leading Arab political figure. As Wolfgang Schwanitz and the late Barry Rubin revealed in their 2014 book, Nazis, Islamists, and the Making of the Modern Middle East, the 24-year-old with no religious training was likely chosen in recognition of his service as a spy for the British in the final years of World War I. The decision, the historians conclude, quote, was one of the most remarkable errors of judgment ever made in a region rife with them. Indeed, al-Husseini would spend the next two decades inciting anti-Jewish violence and refusing numerous British-led attempts to broker peace. By the 1930s, the Mufti was actively seeking and receiving support from fascist Italy and Nazi Germany. U.S. intelligence would later conclude that the 1936 to 1939 Arab Revolt, in which Palestinians led by al-Husseini murdered rivals, Jews, and British officials, quote, was able to continue only because of Nazi funding. So if you are partnering with the Nazis and it's 1939, 40, 41, what are you doing? You are partnering to exterminate Jews. You're partnering with one of the worst monsters ever to rear his ugly head on this earth. In October 1937, the now ex-Mufti fled to Lebanon, but not before he released an, quote, appeal to all Muslims of the world. An appeal to all Muslims of the world. What is al-Husseini's appeal to all Muslims of the world? Don't you know, O Muslims? Don't you know that Allah says we are to be peaceful with our neighbors? Don't you know that Allah says that we are to not hurt our neighbors, that we are to reach out our hands in brotherhood toward our Jewish neighbors? Oh, don't you know, O Muslim, the Quran says, be at peace with your neighbor and love your neighbor, as the great prophet Isa has said, to love your neighbor as yourself. And to love your enemies. Is that what this guy said? I mean, it's laughable even to mock like that. His appeal to all Muslims of the world was quite different than what would be a biblical Christian appeal to all people in the world. He, quote, urged them to cleanse their lands of the Jews. Let me say that again. His appeal to all Muslims of the world was not making up some quote from Muhammad about appeasing all Jews, but he urged them to cleanse their lands of the Jews and laid the foundation for the anti-Semitic arguments used by radical Arab nationalists and Islamists down to this day. He would eventually make his way to Berlin, where he would aid the Axis powers, befriend high-ranking Nazi officials like Heinrich Himmler and Adolf Eichmann, and in a 1941 meeting with Hitler, ask for, quote, a free hand to eradicate every last Jew from Palestine and the Arab world. And then it goes into you know, quite a bit about his post-war activity. He lived in a luxurious two-story, 16-room house. He had a retinue of 70 people. U.S. intelligence warned of a possible terrorist campaign. The U.S. Attempted to they started following him and plotting against him and so forth. Let's see if I can get down to where he... By the time of his death, in Beirut, on July 4th, 1974, the Mufti's legacy was secure. Arafat would similarly play Arab regimes against each other and make war on the Jewish state. A mosque financed by al-Husseini and German ex-Nazis has, in recent years, been linked to Islamist terror groups like al-Qaeda. And much of the rhetoric employed by al-Husseini, such as comparing Zionists to Nazis, remains common today. History, the writer William Faulkner famously observed, is not was, it is. What's going on then? What's going on now? And we must be vigilant against it, both personally and in the foreign policy of our respective governments. All right, that will do it for this week's edition of Mideast News Brief. Be sure to subscribe on your favorite podcasting app. If you have not already, make sure to follow me on Twitter at Mideast Briefing. And I will see you guys all here again next week. It was great to be back. I had a lot of fun. Hope you guys did too. Thankfully, I'm at like 99.5%. So let's do it again next week. Bye, guys. Y'all have a great weekend.